What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Get your texts in now. Friday edition of the show. I'm Jamie Dodd. Drancer's still off. In with me today for the full 2 hours, our guy Josh Elliott Wolf. What's going on, Josh?
Hello.
So
usually when I fill in on the show, I'm filling
so
in
Drance.
For you.
Yes.
Yeah, and I'm like here to read the ads.
Yes.
And set them
no,
up.
You got to be Drance.
Yeah.
You so got to be I'm obnoxious.
Here, I'm here for the expert analysis
yes,
that I obviously bring.
Canucks insider Josh Elliott Wolf.
And I have 17 parlays on the go right now. Fully,
I will say your jacket looks like something Grants would wear.
Ow. So we do have one of the same jackets. This is not it.
Right. I could see him wearing that, though.
Yeah.
So you're in character. I appreciate
Method
that.
Acting.
Yeah. Happy Friday. Happy Good Friday.
Mm-hmm.
The happiest of Fridays.
Some would say.
Don't fact check me on that. But happy Easter weekend to everyone. Thank you for listening. If you have the day off, if you're doing your job, whatever the situation is, we appreciate you tuning in today. Lots to get into today. Of course, the Canucks played last night. We'll dive into that. Kevin Woodley joins us at 12:30. Always a pleasure to chat with Woodley. And Ryan Clark from ESPN joins us at 1 o'clock. So we'll talk to them. And, of course, we will start it off with the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas, hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, March 29th, starting with the headlines, which is the Canucks lose 3-1 to the Dallas Stars last night and miss another chance to clinch a playoff spot. Now, there's no actual drama about clinching a playoff
spot.
What
if they don't do it?
Well, I mean, that would be an interesting story. That would be
Could
a very interesting story.
Last game of the year, and we're like, okay.
White-knuckling it.
Yeah. This is closer than we thought it might be.
Don't even throw that out there. But still, they've missed two consecutive chances at home against good teams now to clinch the playoffs. And I have a bit of a feeling of deja vu coming out of this game, just in terms of the talking points. It feels like much the same conversation as we've had a lot here in this city over the last 6 weeks or so. And, you know, on the one hand, it's refereeing and some bad calls, or at least some controversial calls going against the Canucks. And two, it's the Canucks not getting it done against a really good opponent in the Dallas Stars. And I would add on top of that as well, another recent talking point, a lack of offensive punch from the Vancouver Canucks. So I'll start with the refs, Josh, and I'll say this. I have a lot of time for, like, general complaints about NHL refereeing.
Yes.
I think top to bottom, the whole structure and system of it is deeply flawed. They don't really have, like, a plan of what they want to accomplish in mind. It's all over the place from game to game, from period to period. So I have a lot of time for people saying, like, man, the NHL refs, the system is bad, it doesn't work. That's fine. Where I start to have a problem with it is when it turns into, oh, there's a conspiracy against the Canucks. The refs are costing them these games.
Like, yeah.
No, every team suffers back. Last night, the Canucks got soft power plays because of calls on Dallas. And
mm-hmm.
They didn't score on them. So vent about the refs. We can vent about the refs all we want. I agree. It's frustrating. But it's not an issue unique to the Canucks. And again, ultimately, the focus has to be on what the Canucks can control. And there's no magic way for them to obviously all of a sudden fix NHL reffing.
Yeah. If you ask every fan base of every team in, like, any sport, realistically,
yes.
They're like, ah, the refs are
yeah.
out to
Even
get
like
us.
LA Lakers fans are like, oh, another bad whistle
yeah.
against us.
The NBA hates the Lakers.
Yeah.
That's for sure. Yeah, it's at a certain point, you kind of have to control what you can
yeah.
control. And the Canucks just haven't been able to do that. And what I will say is at points as well, we've even noticed that the composure has gone away when they've gotten these bad
yeah.
calls against them. Is it not only like, it's doing double the damage because, yes, you're getting the bad call against you, and then you kind of unravel, and then the game falls apart mm-hmm. after that.
And I don't think that was an issue last night.
No,
not last night. We've seen in some earlier games. But obviously with the potential high sticking call on Robertson that didn't get overturned, and then the sequence late with the no call on Dakota Joshua, and then the power play for the Stars that then they end up scoring the winning goal on. I understand why it's a talking point, but again, I come back to, you know, my much bigger concern, certainly than any like bad refereeing from last night, is that the Canucks are a one-dimensional team right now, and they have been for a little bit here. And that one dimension, which I would say is great even-strength defense, great 5-on-5 defense, that's really good. Like, that's a really important thing
especially
to be good at.
Into the playoffs.
Yeah. So I don't want to downplay how important that is and what a strength it is for this team, because they are really legitimately good at it. But I don't think you can be a one-dimensional team in the playoffs and expect to go very far. That's a really, really tough road for a team that wants to have an impressive playoff run. And, you know, that I'm quickly becoming more concerned about the lack of even-strength offense, especially because it's coincided with the power play really going silent as well. And so if you just had one other thing to build on beyond the 5-on-5 defense, right? Like, great elite 5-on-5 defensive team with a hot power play. Okay, that team can do some damage. Mm-hmm. But you need that other calling card. And right now, whether it's scoring at even strength, whether it's great special teams, the power play, whatever it is, they just don't have that extra edge to separate themselves. And I think that's what you're seeing in these games against other really good teams.
And for a while, we kind of looked at it and it was like, hey, they still got this runway. We know the talent is there. That, mm-hmm. you know, like, eventually they should figure it out. Now mm-hmm. we're running out of the runway that's left in the season here. And yeah, I mean, like, if I had to rank my concerns, I still think I would put the power play at number one, just because, to your point, hey, if you get a hot power play in the playoffs, yeah, that can really change a series. 5-on-5 scoring, realistically, like, they aren't creating as many chances as they should, but also I think they're not getting the bounces they were mm-hmm. earlier in the season. And that's okay. That's going to happen over the course of a season, but you do need to get one of these things going before you get to the playoffs. And I'm also wondering if, like, hey, I understand the experimenting with a bunch of different line combinations by Rick Tocchet, trying to find something. Yep. But I also just wonder if eventually you need to go, hey, this is what we're going to look like in the playoffs. Get some chemistry, because if this doesn't work, you're not going to go far.
Yeah, and I mean, in particular, you see last night in the surprise forward lines, which we can talk about in a little bit, but, you know, with Baines and Lafferty in the top six, I think that raised a lot of eyebrows, understandably so. And as you pointed out, like, this is late in the year to be trying two guys who don't profile as top six players alongside your number one point producer this year. So it's going to be really interesting to see how long that lasts. And, you know, to your point about the power play being the number one concern going into the playoffs, I think that's fair. And the reason it is for me is because with their 5-on-5 scoring, like, they might just be an average 5-on-5 scoring team, right? If you're not getting the bounces, and we've seen what their chance generation is, with the power play, it feels like they should be so much better. You know what I mean? It feels like the gap between what they're doing and what they're capable of is so much greater than it is on any other area of the ice right now, right? Like, even the penalty kill, if they could just be consistently average, that would be fine. But it feels like with this collection of talent, the power play should be elite. For it to be where it is and look so stagnant and so kind of devoid of ideas and chemistry is just stunning. I never would have guessed that the team would be this successful while the power play looks like this heading into the playoffs.
And we've even seen it this year under the same coach coaching the power play, that these group of players were able to put something together on the power play and be a really damaging power play for other teams. And it's weird. I don't know if it's a personnel issue. I don't know if it's a systematic issue. One thing I was kind of looking at yesterday, and look, I'm not one to harp on Elias Pettersson. I've been...
Sure you're not, Josh.
Yeah, you know what?
Classic
you
Josh.
You know what? I'm joining the text line. I'm going to start hating on him every game. But no, I would say I'm someone who usually believes that he's going to work it out. He's going to figure it out. But one thing I did notice last night is I was like, man, on the power play, a lot of pucks seem to die on Pettersson's stick. And that's not a consistent thing, like, year to year. It's just a thing I've noticed lately. And so I went back, I counted the total giveaways for players on the Canucks top power play unit. Brock Besser had one. Quinn Hughes had one. JT Miller had two. Elias Pettersson had six. And two of them,
great.
Two of them were recovered before it exited, got out of the zone. But, and those aren't even shots. Those are like, hey, it kind of fell off a stick, went to the other team, they got it out. So that's a concern of mine right now. And I don't know if that's a, that doesn't feel like something that can get sorted out in practice or by switching up the personnel. It's just a matter of him gaining confidence and that power play as a whole gaining more confidence.
Yeah, the power play thing is really interesting because you can look at it and, you know, Pugh Suter does feel a little bit like a square peg in a round hole as the fifth guy there. But at the same time, it's not like you're watching the power play and thinking like, oh, Pugh Suter's really screwing this up for them right now. Like, Pugh Suter's blowing it. The other four guys who should be the backbone of an elite power play, they need to be doing more as well. I think you need to get them in the right headspace and making plays. And then I think you also need to maybe find the ideal fifth person to be on that top power play unit. The Pettersson thing is really interesting. And as you said, look, a frequent target of the texters in the 650 Dunbar Lumber text line. And my stance has been long term, I have zero concerns about Elias Pettersson, about the contract, about his ability to produce, be an exceptional player in this league. Not concerned about that at all. But I mean, what, 8 games left in the season now?
Yeah,
nine. 9 games left in the season. So we're not really having a long-term discussion, right? Like, there's 9 games, and then you're in a best-of-7 series, possibly against a really good team in the Western Conference. And I think it's fair to say that they need more from Elias Pettersson. And I think they need more 5-on-5. I think they need more on the power play as well. And again, I'm not out on the player by any stretch. I'm extremely, extremely in on Elias Pettersson. But I think both things are possible. You can believe in the talent of the player. You can believe in that he is a superstar player in this league while also recognizing that in the here and now, they need more from him. And I think we saw that last night. Like, there was just, you know, I don't know that Rick Tocchet was talking about Elias Pettersson when after the game, you know, he's saying, well, some guys were going inside, some guys were doing this, but there were a number, not just on the power play, but a number of plays where, you know, Elias Pettersson's losing the puck. And that to me speaks more than anything about him being off his game, because when he's at the top of his game, he's so smart and so deliberate with the puck on his stick.
Mm-hmm. And again, I don't even know if it's I don't know how to sort that issue out other than gaining confidence.
Yeah.
Because what we've seen, like, Tocchet's trying a bunch of different guys on that line, and it seems like at times, like, you put Connor Garland there, and there is some success, and then it fizzles out a bit. And I honestly, I thought last night, the Hoglander, Pettersson, Besser line, I thought it was fine, but it wasn't. I had higher hopes when I saw it put together in warm-up.
I think that's fair.
And when that's, especially, so when you load up that line and you leave Miller with Lafferty and Baines, you're basically saying, like, hey, this is the line that needs to go tonight.
Yep.
And we didn't see that from them last night. I think they were 50-50 in high danger chances for percentage, and according to Natural Stat Trick, 5-on-5. So that's kind of the issue, is that's a line that should be winning their matchups, even against difficult competition like the Stars, and we didn't see it last night.
Yeah, and last night, I mean, to kind of bring up the other headline from the game, it was Dakota Joshua's return, and, you know, speaking of surprise forward lines, he was back with his previous line mates, Teddy Bluger and Connor Garland, and I thought Joshua in general was excellent last night in his return.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, that was the team's best line. I thought Connor Garland was their best forward pretty easily, right? He sets up the one goal. He was really good on the forecheck. He was really good just in general feeding the puck into that dangerous area in front of the net. And it's great that the third line plays so well, but if Dakota Joshua, Teddy Bluger, and Connor Garland is your most consistent source of even strength offense, that's a problem.
That's a major.
You need them to be the complement, not the main course of what you're doing at 5-on-5. And last night, again, they were far and away the best line in terms of driving offense for the Vancouver Canucks. All right, those are your headlines. By the way, the Canucks missed the chance to clinch yesterday, but I believe, looking at the NHL standings, so take this with a grain of salt, that the Canucks can clinch without playing on Saturday if Minnesota and St. Louis both lose. Now, Minnesota plays Vegas, so that's likely, but at least possible. The Blues do play San Jose, though, so that's a little trickier. So
I believe.
Yeah, clinching might. But you know what? You don't want to back in like that with other teams losing on a day off.
It doesn't
feel
as good.
Yeah, you want to win. So they should still have winning on the table against the, or clinching on the table with a win against the Ducks on Sunday. We're going to go to the broadsheet. I want to play a clip here. I don't know if our... we're doing some technical difficulties here. But to the broadsheet. So we're kind of talking around it when we're talking about fifth guy on the power play, right? Because when he was acquired, I think Elias Lindholm was the person that a lot of people thought would step into that role for the departed Andre Kuzmenko. He did early, but only early, right? Scores those two goals in front of the net on his in his first game against the Hurricanes. But even before he's been out of the lineup, it was, you know, spotty usage on the power play at best. The Lindholm injury situation is such a fascinating one. Rick Dhaliwal from Donnie and Dolly on Czech TV was on with Halford and Brough this morning. Here's what he had to say about the Lindholm situation.
The Lindholm injury is a great mystery. He's missed three practices, one game. Now, I'm going to tell you this. Getting info on this injury is tough. I know the Canucks were not happy with the leaks on Demko's injury, so you can understand why everyone's tight-lipped on this one. Patrick Johnson of the province is adamant the injury took place March 5th in L.A. That's 3.5 weeks ago, guys. There is concern here. It's been nagging him for a while. But 3.5 weeks ago, shut the guy down, get him 100% healthy, and get him ready for the playoffs. Sounds like they're having a tough time nailing down what's wrong with him. Some think it's an upper body. Some think it's a hand or wrist. I did hear that nothing is broken. Canucks, Tocchet keeps saying it's not serious, but... go back to the night Demko got hurt. Tocchet said it's not serious. Well, guess what? Demko has turned out to be 4 to 5 weeks. If he did get hurt March 5th, this is going to be 4 to 5, 6 weeks, same thing. I also don't think the Canucks got damaged goods here, guys. People are saying, oh, you know, the Flames, you know, dealt the Canucks, you know, a player that was injured. I don't think that's accurate. I think he got hurt playing to Vancouver, not Calgary. So if you look at the Canucks are strong up the middle, I don't have an issue with Pettersson, Miller, Bluger, and Suter up the middle, but it, now look at the wings last night. Look who was in the top six, yeah. Baines and Lafferty. Like, you cannot go into the playoffs with Baines and Lafferty. Like, I don't know, like, with Miller last night, that you started the game with Lafferty and Baines, and I'm sitting there thinking, so now you know why the Canucks were so desperately trying to get a top six forward at the deadline. Now you know why.
So that's Rick Dhaliwal earlier today on Halford and Brough on Elias Lindholm, calling it a great mystery, tough to get info, saying there is concern there. And there's just such a lack of clarity, Josh, that because, you know, we had somebody text in. It's almost as if the Canucks miss Kuzmenko. It's been a downhill slide since he left, especially on the power play. I don't really think the Canucks miss Andre Kuzmenko because I still don't think Rick Tocchet would be playing him. Mm-hmm. But they definitely miss the guy that they gave up Kuzmenko to get. Like, and it, as much as you can say, well, Lindholm wasn't playing that well, as Dhaliwal was saying there, you take him out of the lineup and all of a sudden you move Suter down to the bottom six to flesh out your center position. That promotes guys into the top six on the wing who shouldn't really be there. And as much as he's been underwhelming, he can still be a key piece for this team, could potentially help them on the power play. It's just so hard to even project how the lineup could work with Lindholm at this point because we have no idea what's going on and no idea if and when he's going to be ready to play again.
And the other part of it is I feel like he hasn't been given enough of a consistent run, both on the power play and on any line in particular,
100%.
Especially in the top six.
Yep.
Like I think Rick Tocchet does a lot of great things for this team. I think sometimes he can have an itchy trigger finger and kind of be moving guys around maybe prematurely, and especially when you're bringing a guy in like him via trade, it takes time to find that chemistry. And so it's interesting. I wonder how many games he's going to get in before the playoffs too, because it's kind of the opposite of Thatcher Demko right now, right? Where we're like, hey, it's okay. He's getting some rest. He'll work his way back up. Lindholm, it's like, hey, you don't need rest. You
we have
need to
no
figure
idea.
Out where you're going to play, buddy.
100%.
Let's figure this out first.
Well, because, it's a good point. There's two questions, right? There's the physical aspect of it, right? Which is like, what's bothering him? How much was that hurting his play before he started missing these games? Is that going to get better? Can he play through it? There's all that conversation. And then, as you said, there's the he needs to find a spot in the lineup. And, you know, they tried him in the top six. Then they decided they liked him better at center. you know, I got the sense there was some frustration with the lack of offensive punch that he brought. But if you just bring him in, plug him in as your third line center, ask him to play those tough minutes, focus on the defensive side of the game, and at least give him a consistent role, maybe he can help out on your power play. I just think the extra depth that he brings to the situation would make a huge difference. Even if he's not the guy scoring goals, it just helps balance the lineup so much more than the state it's in right now. And if we're listing, you know, concerns going into the playoffs, I think Lindholm's status has to be up there because we just have absolutely no idea what it's going to be. Another quick note in the broadsheet from Dhaliwal mentioning that Tom Vilander, as expected, will not sign this summer. So he'll be going back for his second year at Boston University. I believe BU won in the NCAA playoffs yesterday. So Willander's season continues at Boston, and he will be back for his sophomore season next year. Lineup notes, no practice today. Rick Tocchet saying he wants the guys to reset mentally ahead of the game on Sunday. They'll be back on the practice ice tomorrow. So we'll see if there's a shuffle of any sort to the forward lines. I would kind of expect one after there was a pretty significant shuffle and it didn't really get results, yeah, in particular in the top six. I suspect it's back to the drawing board for Rick Tocchet. But to your point, like, drawing board time is almost over here. You know, we need to yeah, settle on some things and lock into that chemistry before the playoffs here.
The issue is you look at it and you're like, well, like, it's not working right now, so mess with it a little bit and see what works. But also, you need to there's a weird tightrope you have to
100%.
Walk. I do still, like, I was very interested in seeing what Dakota Joshua would look like with JT Miller, yep, and Brock Besser. And we didn't see it last night. I wonder if that's something they go back to on Sunday or potentially in practice tomorrow, because theoretically, like, everything about that line feels like it should work and it should be, like, we talk about, hey, if Joshua, Bluger, Garland are your most impactful, effective three forwards, that's not great. But if you split them up and they're still equally as effective helping other lines, then you're maybe, mm-hmm, cooking with something. And that's where, like, Dakota Joshua theoretically should complement Miller and Besser so well that I do want to see that put back together. But again, it's the tightrope of, yes, you can put that together, but also, do you want to mess with the one line you have right now that does have chemistry?
Yeah. That's the thing. And I can understand why Rick Tocchet went to it, because it has been so far and away their most consistent, most productive line. And it does feel like it's going to be an instance of trying to build everything else around that as the standby. But we'll see when they take the practice ice tomorrow. Playoff forecast. So look, Canucks lose in regulation. Edmonton wins last night. But still, per Dom Lucision's model at The Athletic, Canucks with a 65% chance to win the division. Game 80 against Edmonton certainly looming large right now as they close the gap a little bit here. But, you know, the Canucks, they got the Ducks on Sunday. They have two more against the Arizona Coyotes. They have another one against Calgary, who's really in free fall as well. If you take care of business in those games and beat Edmonton, I think that gets them up to 108 points. And at that point, Edmonton would not quite have to run the table in their remaining games, but come really, really close to it. So if you take care, you're still very much control your own destiny. You should be able to take care of business in those games. The other interesting thing is Dom's added most likely first-round opponents to his model's update here. And with 31% each, the Canucks' most likely first-round playoff opponents, Nashville and L.A. in a tie. And I think I speak for everyone when I say, please let it be Nashville. I know
even
which one I prefer.
Just from an entertainment point of view,
yes,
let it be Nashville.
Please, please let it be Nashville.
But yeah, so Vegas is now third in the Pacific, not, yep, on point percentage. They're 1 point up on LA right now. But Nashville, if the playoffs started right now, the Canucks would be playing against the Nashville Predators.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I was looking at before the show, so Nashville ends their season April 15th. And the playoffs start April 20th. Vancouver ends their season April 18th.
Yeah.
So an extra 3 days of rest. And, mm-hmm, look, I would still, out of all those teams, I would still rather play Nashville. But it's interesting. They're getting all this extra rest before round one starts. I wonder, hey, you're going in, not only would they be going in hot, theoretically, if they keep this up until the end of the season, they would also have a bunch of rest as well. So, and that can be dangerous for,
yep,
especially because, hey, the Canucks are trying to capitalize on home ice, but Nashville will be coming in rested. Who knows?
It's tough. It's a tough situation for the Canucks playing on that Thursday in Winnipeg. So not that it's all the way out on the East Coast, but it's, you know, it's a lot farther than Calgary or Seattle or you know, even Vegas or something like that. And you know that from a television perspective, the NHL wants the Canucks to play on Saturday, obviously, right? As the big premier West Coast draw in Canada. We'll see how that shakes down. Not officially that, not, it's not official that the Canucks are going to play on the 20th, but if I had to bet on it, I would bet on that. Speaking of betting odds, the Canucks, here's the update I'll give. Canucks currently have the fourth best odds to win the Western Conference at plus 600 behind Edmonton, Colorado, and Dallas. That feels very fair. It feels tough for me to get upset about, like, that seems exactly where they should be.
Yeah.
So, good job, Vegas.
It's you like did it.
They know what they're doing. But anyways, Canucks are plus 600 to win the Western Conference. We'll take a break. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Kevin Woodley from NHL.com and In Goal Magazine joins us next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.